And so today, most of the time your entomology seminars are reports and research. This one's going to be a little bit different because I'm going to be talking about extension activities, what we do to get the results of research out to the public. And so the title here is Educating the Urban Public About Insect Pests and Their Management. It's going to focus a lot on their management. Frankly, the Bohart Museum does a wonderful job of educating the public about insects and the good sides of insects. Are you all familiar with cooperative extension and the fact that the University of California is a land-grant university, and that's why people like me, and Frank also has an extension appointment, and Eric and Larry Godfrey, and we have county farm advisors in all the counties in California who teach the public, the public science-based education on things that are useful to them, like pest management. And this is all because the land grant back in the 1800s, the Morrell Act was passed that required land grant universities to educate the public about things that are relevant to their lives, science-based things. The Smith-Lever Act is the act that established cooperative extension and the importance of having people in extension to take research information out to the fields and to the public and make it relevant and useful to them. And so that's what I do. It's a very important role, and it's a very exciting kind of career if you like people. And so if you're doing your graduate work in entomology, I suggest you consider extension as a potential career. So why do we care about urban audiences? A lot of times when we're talking about IPM, people think agriculture. But in fact, the urban audiences, in my opinion, are more important to get information out. In California, the urban public uses 70% of the pesticides used. The pesticides are a big environmental issue in the state. And two-thirds of the probable pesticide injuries in California are in the urban areas, or non-agricultural, so homes, hospitals, schools. So there's a lot of issues with pesticides. Pesticides, of course, are being applied for pests. And urban use of pesticides has become a real serious water quality issue, because it's been shown in many areas of California the streams and creeks and rivers and bays are contaminated with pesticides at levels toxic to aquatic invertebrates. And the source of this toxicity is pesticide use, and in many areas, the main source of that pesticide use is urban use around your homes and around your gardens. And so education of this group is important. How do pesticides move in the environment? Well, they can drift in the air. You apply it to your tree or your soil or your sidewalk, and you think, well, it hasn't run off. But what happens? Your sprinkler comes on 8 hours later when you're asleep, and it washes it off and right into that storm drain. And where does that storm drain lead? It leads directly into a creek or a river, and that's where our aquatic invertebrates are. And so this is the source of much of that pesticide toxicity in our water. I was involved in a very large experiment, a large study with Lauren Oakey here at Davis, and Jay Gann at Riverside, a billion other people. But over 5 years, we looked at the pesticide residues that were coming out of storm drains in residential areas in Sacramento and Orange County. And what we saw was that the whole year round, this is just an example from one place. These are pyrethroid measurements coming out on a every other week basis in Orange County. And you can see that the whole year long, this goes from October to November here, all year round we're finding residues of pyrethroids. And the levels of toxicity, aquatic toxicity, depending on pyrethroid, is somewhere around here, 100 parts per billion. So much of the year, there's toxic levels of pyrethroids running off your lawn, running off your sidewalk, into the rivers and creeks. So this is an issue. So what are the approaches to reducing problems associated with pesticide use? Well, we could ban the pesticides. That'd be a good idea. But you know, it's very difficult to ban a pesticide. Of course, there's a lot of political pressure. Anytime somebody wants to remove a pesticide from registration, coming from industry, coming from people who want to use the material, and the regulatory agencies have to find a really big problem to ban a pesticide. So it happens, but it's a very long process. It usually takes many years, often decades, to actually happen after a problem has been identified. And we want things to move a little faster than that. You can restrict their use, and again, this is the regulatory agencies that have to do it. They can say, well, you can only use it in this kind of area, or only people who are licensed to use it can use it. And these restrictions can, in fact, reduce a lot of the problems if people follow the restrictions. But this is the job of regulatory agencies. In California, that would be the Department of Pesticide Regulation and the County Agricultural Commissioners. And then the third approach is outreach and education, and that's our role at the university. And I'm very happy not to be a regulator of pesticide. You know, we're very lucky not to be involved in regulations because it's just a, you know, a pain in the butt and a headache, and everybody hates you from all sides. But outreach and education is a very positive thing to do because you can really show people how to do things better, show them how they can solve their problems in a more environmentally sound way. And that's what we do at Cooperative Extension. In terms of restricting use and educating people, sort of put one thing in the urban areas and also in agricultural areas, many people who use pesticides are licensed to use pesticides or certified. And this is a really good way to get better use of pesticides. And you have to get a qualified applicator license, you pass an exam, then that assures you have some basic knowledge. You have to take continuing education, 20 hours every couple of years to renew your license. And the Ag Commissioner knows who you are, and if you pour that pesticide into the drain or using a product somewhere you're not supposed to be doing, you get fined, you might lose your license. And so this is a good way to push people to do things the right way. Continuing education, because they have to take this 20 hours of education, is a good way to let them know about new issues or new ways that have discovered that you can use pesticides and not have so many environmental problems. So in urban areas, we do have people who are, in agricultural area, basically everybody who applies pesticides for hire is licensed. And that's one reason why pesticide use in agricultural areas is actually a lot safer. You get less people being poisoned. You have really, in the long run, less environmental problems, at least in the water quality issue, because so many of the people using pesticides are licensed or certified to use them or supervised by people who are licensed or supervised or certified. The structural pest control people, those are the people who apply pesticides inside for ants or termites or cockroaches, they're licensed, not by the Department of, well, by the Structural Pest Control Board. Many landscape professionals who use pesticides are licensed, but the sort of mow and blow guys who mostly mow your lawn and trim your hedge but occasionally apply a pesticide, a lot of them aren't, even though they're supposed to be by law. And some public agency personnel are. And so these people who are licensed really gives us a ready opportunity to educate them because they have to take continuing education. DPR has their names on file. They can send them information about new laws. And so that group can be managed or educated much more easily than those who are not licensed. So who's not certified or licensed? A lot of business owners, restaurants. Warehouse owners, they apply their pesticides, not certified. The maintenance gardeners, the mow and blow guys, a lot of them aren't, but they're supposed to be by law. And then, of course, the big group is the middle group, which is probably all of you guys, consumers. So all of you who are going out to Home Depot and buying that Roundup, you're not, how many of you are licensed were certified to apply pesticides. Oh, we've got a few here. Oh, yeah. It's a good license to get if you're going to go into any kind of pest management, even if you want to be an extension person. If you're going to do research involving pesticide trials, you've got to be licensed, or at least have somebody on your staff being licensed. So those people are hard to get to. I'm just going to very quickly talk about the maintenance gardeners, because I spent a lot of time maintenance gardeners in the last 4 years. But it was an issue that concerned me, because maintenance gardeners, there's probably about 50,000 maintenance gardeners in California managing people's lawns and hedges, and occasionally applying herbicides or insecticides to control problems. They mostly buy the products at Home Depot or someplace like that. They're not using agricultural products and they can't by law. But still, many of those products have problems and certainly can be associated with water quality issues. But of the 50,000 out there, only about 1,000 of them are licensed. And this is a big concern for the Department of Pesticide Regulation, particularly as they have been identifying this big water issue associated with urban pesticides. And so they had a great interest in getting these people licensed. But one of the problems is, if you want to get licensed as a landscape pesticide applicator, first of all, you have to speak and read English. And there's a huge percentage of the maintenance gardeners who are Spanish speakers. And the study guides and the exams were just really too difficult for many in this group, and they were also just really scared. So we needed to understand the diversity of this population to try to see how we could get more of them licensed, because the reason we want them licensed is so we can offer them educational opportunities about these issues. And so working with the Department of Pesticide Regulation and the Ag Commissioners and also maintenance gardeners themselves, we worked together over several years, and we developed study guides in English and Spanish with lots of illustrations. We simplified the exams. We allowed people to take exams in Spanish as well as English. Of course, there's a lot of other languages out there like Hmong, where there's gardeners. And we put together a free online training program in Spanish and English that they can take to prepare for the exam, and worked with the agricultural commissioners using the training program that we developed, and they're taking it out in their counties to try to get the maintenance gardeners licensed there. And San Luis Obispo County has done this, Stanislaus County, and several other counties, and they've really gotten, they've got a lot of interest, and they're getting fairly high pass rates on these exams. So this is a group that hopefully will have more of them licensed, and so this will be a good way to educate them about issues having to do with the pesticides they apply. Okay, as Frank said, I'm the associate director of the Urban and Community IPM program within the, or I directed that within the IPM, statewide IPM program, and we're kind of small. But we have a vision, and we have a goal, and many goals, and a lot of opportunity, and lots of people to serve, because there's 38 million people in California, all of whom have pest problems in their gardens or homes or somewhere that they're interested in solving. So we've got a good audience. The question is, how can two of us, two or four or five of us, get at them? So the vision of actually the IPM program is making ecosystem-based IPM the way that Californians manage pests. So we're really trying to get everybody to understand what IPM is and to try it out. We may have problems. And we're trying to reach all the urban audiences, but we put a particular emphasis on those audiences that aren't licensed applicators, because those people actually have a higher level of knowledge and, as explained earlier, a better opportunity to get trained through their continuing education. And as I said, there's very few people in the university system who do work with urban audiences, and even less that work with pest management issues with urban audiences, and so there's probably about six or so around the state. And there's, so with all these 38,000 people we have to reach, we cannot do it ourselves, so we have to form partnerships. We have to find out, well, you know what, there's a lot of other people out there who are delivering information to these same audiences, and in some cases, similar types of information. How can we work with them to get this information out? Because that's the way that we have to work. We can't have one-to-one relationships with every consumer out there, not even every maintenance gardener or every structural pest control person. And so we've worked, well, the UC Master Gardeners are really important part of our extension effort in the University of California. For those of you, are you familiar with Master Gardeners? Maybe some of your parents are them, or maybe some of you are. The Master Gardener program is really neat. These are volunteers. These are people in the county, and they work with the county Master Gardener program, which is part of the cooperative extension office in the county. And the Master Gardener, there's usually a Master Gardener coordinator who works with them. These people go through a very intensive training program, usually about 50 or, I can't quite remember how many hours, but usually about 12 weeks, 4 or 5 hours each week of training, and on horticulture subjects and on pest management. And then after the training, they work in the community to dispense information to the community about how to grow plants or manage pests in their communities. And so they are very important way that we can get information out to consumers, because we just don't have, and many counties have 75 or 100 master gardeners working in the county doing all kinds of things, working with schools, working with prisons, working with garden clubs, working with all kinds of situations. So they are great partners. We're also really trying to partner with retail stores, because if you talk to people about what is their first source of, when they have a pest problem, what's their first source of information? Do you think it's cooperative extension?
Ace Hardware.
Sadly, sorry, Ace Hardware, that's right. Because, you know, they got that ant problem, and they're going to go off to Ace Hardware, and they're going to ask that clerk, what do I spray? And, you know, that clerk then is automatically an expert, even though, you know, might have just been hired last week and doesn't know an ant has six legs. But the retail people are the chief source of information for many, many consumers on how to manage their pests. And so we want to work with them so they can give out better information, because we're never going to get to all those people who go to Ace Hardware. But maybe we can get to some of these Ace Hardware firms. And so these are people, so we're partnering. That's how, with a very small group of people, we're going to get information out to all 38,000 Californians. So this goes back a while, 2003, but you know, one of the things, it is very difficult to find out what pesticides urban users or consumers use, where they use them, what kinds of pesticides, how they use them. The California Department of Pesticide Regulation requires that all agriculture, all farmers and growers, they have to report all their pesticide use. And you can go to the Department of Pesticide Regulation, and you can get any block of land, and you can say, okay, what pesticides have been applied on this land over the last 10 years? And they can give you a computer file that's got all the pounds of all the different pesticides that have been applied on that land. That can be really useful if you're doing some research project. But in urban areas, there's some reporting of use by those licensed people. But, of course, did you report pesticide use last time you bought Raid at the Ace Hardware? Uh-uh. You know, and Ace Hardware doesn't even report the fact that you bought that Raid. So nobody knows. Nobody knows what's used. What's even more incredible is you can go on the Department of Pesticide Regulation website, and if you're an almond grower, you can actually find out all the pesticides that are registered in California for almonds. But if you want to find out all pesticides that are used, registered for use for consumers, no way to find that out. At least not through regulation. So we decided we would do a survey and see if we could figure it out. Because if you're going to do extension work, you want to have a little bit of knowledge about what these people are using and why they're using them. So this is Backrest. We did a survey, a very large telephone survey in three areas of the state. And we found out that, depending on the area, between 50% and 78% had applied a pesticide themselves outdoors in the last 6 months. So people are using pesticides. And about half of them dispose of these pesticides improperly. So there's an educational opportunity. And a lot of this improper disposal can lead to water quality issues. But what we found, what was interesting, the whole point of the telephone survey, all that money, all that survey, we learned a lot of things. But what we didn't learn was we didn't learn what pesticides these people were using. Because even though they knew they used a pesticide in the last 6 months, did they have any idea of what the active ingredient of that product was? No way. They didn't have any idea of what they had applied. And, you know, they might have known, well, it was a Raid product, but you know how many different active ingredients are in Raid products? They may have known, well, it was to control weeds. But, of course, if you've ever looked at a pesticide label, you know you need a magnifying glass to see the active ingredient. And so why would anybody look? But we found that we could not find out this way, through a survey, how what pesticides people in California are using. So we decided to do a shelf survey. So we went around to stores that sell pesticides. So that's hardware stores, garden centers and nurseries, drug stores, grocery stores, all those kinds of stores. And we went through the shelves and we checked, we wrote down every pesticide that we found on shelves in many stores in several counties. And we came up with a list, which we thought was fairly comprehensive, but probably not complete. And we found 542 different products available for consumers containing 112 different active ingredients on their shelves. So who provided the training to these consumers to decide which one was going to be the best, which one was going to be the safest for their children, how to apply it? They didn't get licensed. They didn't get certified. In high school, you don't get a class on choosing pesticide products. And so there is just such an incredible variety. A lot of these products are the same products that are used in agricultural situations that have the same hazards. Some of the very most hazardous products are not allowed for use by consumers, but a lot of pretty hazardous materials are out there on the shelves. And these people are not trained to use them. Yeah, so most people couldn't remember what product they use. That's why we did the shelf survey. So we got sort of an idea of things. And we're continuing to follow up with this shelf survey. Actually, Rick Melnico, who's our pesticide coordinator in California, he's continuing to do this, so we're watching, seeing how what things are changing on the shelves. But it's really the only way we can sort of know what's there. Okay, so in pest management and insect pests, what do people want to know? Well, they sort of want to know what's causing the problem, but that's not as important to them as how do I get rid of it? What do I spray? And so that, you know, most people, that's what they want to know. But we really are seeing a growing interest in people who would like to find some kind of organic or environmentally sound way to manage their pests. And that's very heartening, and it's good to see that. I think that's a definite trend that we are seeing. And in fact, it's enough of a trend that the manufacturers and distributors of home use pesticides are definitely putting out a lot more products that are organic and very benign. The only problem is some, well, significant portion of those products don't work, but they are benign. They don't work. Sometimes all people need to do is just to spray, and then they feel better, and they can just let nature take its course. Okay, so what are the challenges related to educating consumers? Well, an awful lot of people, not the people in this room, but a lot of people just don't like arthropods of any kind, creepy crawlers. And they don't have very much knowledge of pests, and they have little knowledge of pesticides. So really, it's a pretty blank slate with an awful lot of consumers. They do know what they know, and they know they don't like those bugs. And they're not always appreciative of science-based information. I think that's been one of my disappointments, is that, you know, sometimes I'll go somewhere and I say, well, I'm from the University of California, and this is the way to do it. And, you know, people say, well, you know, well, that's your opinion. I mean, they told me, you know, it's sort of like the University of California opinion is as good as, you know, the pesticide company opinion, or the organic gardener down the street, or there isn't. I do believe back many years ago, when I was like a kid, people actually thought people at the university, you know, they respected their expertise. But you know, that's, as we all know, it's dwindled quite a bit. So you have to be convinced. And of course, the other thing about consumers is they want quick solutions. They don't want to, you know. They want a quick solution. So if it's going to take a little bit longer time, you could spend a lot of time explaining that to them. So we have to make our messages compelling for this reason. The key messages are: most insects in the garden and landscape are not pests. Identify your pests before trying to manage it. Because now, fortunately, a lot of it used to be in the old days with diazinon and chlorpyrifos, which were the standard materials, that killed everything. So you really didn't need to identify pests to control it, but it's true with a lot of the pyrethrins too. And we're trying to let people know that the University of California has resources that can help them identify and manage their pests. And we're trying to get them to understand, crudely at least, what integrated pest management is. It relies on prevention, and for insect management, particularly biological control, get them to appreciate biological control, and integrating non-chemical methods as much as possible. That's really the appropriate way to manage pests in gardens and landscapes. But pesticides may be required, and if they are required, we want to help them choose the least toxic solutions. When we started out this urban program, when I first came into the IPM program, back when Frank and I were young, we were focused on agriculture, and so my first 10 years I spent doing IPM manuals for alfalfa, tomatoes, crops, and stuff like that. But it became obvious to me that the master gardeners were out there, and the consumers wanted this information, but the university had a little bit of information on a few things, but it was very scattered, and then very poor information for consumers about how they could manage their pests and identify their pests. I can remember it really came to me. I went to the state fair and to the Master Gardener booth, the University of California Master Gardener booth there, and they were there to solve people problems. And what did they have there? They had the Ortho Problem Solver. That was their resource. And I said, this is not the University of California. I can't stand it. And so we decided that we would try to do something to provide information for home gardeners. And so the pests of the garden and small farm, and pests of landscape, trees and shrubs are sort of our basic resources, because you can't, you know, it's nice to have master gardeners, but if you're not providing them with good information, or retail people, if you're not providing them with good, solid information, they can't extend it. So the first thing, and it was a long process, was to develop these sort of vitals of information. And another thing we did, especially as the web came on, a little bit before that too, we started putting together short answer, what we call pest notes, on various problems. And these are written by farm advisors, specialists, faculty throughout the university system. And these are fairly short answers, but they're pretty sophisticated. Information about how to manage pests, and there's over 150, and I prod and kick and try to get people to write these. I help them write it, so we can get this information on pests out there, and then we try to keep them up to date. So these are on the web, and you can also print out these pretty copies with the colored photos. It's also a good way for us to get people in the system involved in the urban stuff. you know, it's a way of engaging people. And as several people in this room know, I have tried to engage them in the urban programs by forcing them to either write or review pest notes. And I think once the pest note was written, they probably felt pretty happy. So, because we need to get our academic people who are out there doing really good research, but sometimes we need to pull them in to say something that the public will find useful. And so we have, the UC IPM program has a wonderful website. Has everybody been on the UC IPM website? If not, this is where you should go for your next pest problem. I think I brought some cards here for the, brought a bunch of stuff here. But I brought some cards, but anyway, it's www.ipm.ucdavis.edu. We just reformatted it, so if you looked at it about 3 months ago, it looked really different from this, but this is the home and garden page, and so this covers thousands of pests, and you can identify your pests. You can go in and choose like your plant type, like flowers, for instance. You can go in there if your problem's on dahlias. You can click on dahlias, and it'll give you a list of the pests on dahlias, and then you can look at the pages that have information. So we're really building this website to be a really comprehensive information source and training master gardeners to use this. If we don't provide this information for master gardeners and for the retail store people, they're going to go elsewhere for information, and then the information may not be as desirable as we wish. And there's a whole lot of stuff on the website. If you haven't been there, there's a lot of depth of information. There's a lot of information on biological control in the Natural Enemies Gallery. And I mention this because getting consumers excited about beneficial insects is really a good way to get them excited about integrated pest management and not using that pesticide. People really do like beneficial insects. You know, they really, once they hear about it, they get very excited and they will pull back and they want to know more. So we have a lot of information on there. We have this poster there, the new Natural Enemies poster, the new Meet the Beneficials poster. You can print this out and post it on your wall if you like. But this is the type of thing we try to make available to schools and to other all kinds of people so that they can learn to love the insects and not kill them all in the garden. Ants, big issue. Ants are the major target of urban pesticides, and particularly those pyrethroid pesticides, which are the ones with the big water quality problem. So we've taken an extra effort to try to get people to manage ants in more environmentally sound ways, and not using the pyrethroid perimeter treatments, which aren't that effective anyway. So we've got a whole section here on our web with quick answers, Spanish, English, and we have a set of videos that people can watch to find out what to do in an ant emergency, how to use baits. This one on refillable bait stations is good. And we get a lot of hits on this. 9,000 people a year look at these videos. So we are getting information out this way. People are interested in pesticide toxicity. We've recently developed these charts of pesticide. These are all the pests you can't read it on. These are all the pesticides that are available for ant control, for instance, and it shows you the toxicity, water quality, natural enemies, honeybees, people, acute and long term, so people can make some choice when they're choosing pesticides. Another of our core outreach materials is our IPM kiosk, and I brought this here, and I tried to lure some of you into using it, but it is really fun, and we're really able to lure. Small children are much more easily lured than the adults seem to be more inhibited. But this is placed in libraries, and the master gardeners take it to the county fairs and retail stores. But it's a fun way for people to learn about insects. So they can. There's information on 60 pests. There's videos. They can print out information. There's quick tips about problems. And we have 16 units, and they circulate around the state. So the Master Gardener programs or retail stores borrow them from us for 6 weeks, take them out. And so we've got them going out to maybe 400 or 500 locations a year, and they're used by tens of thousands of people every year. And it's just a different way to deliver information. Afterwards, you can come and play with it. It's in Spanish and it's in English, so we can get out to more people. There's weeds, insects, you can diagnose problems. Anyway, there's videos, so it's fun.
Roses are red, aphids are too, but they're also black and green. They don't spend a lot of green to get rid of them. Pesticides kill aphids, but they also kill good bugs. And irrigation washes all that toxic poison into gutters, storm drains, and ends up in our waterway.
So you get the idea. So we have a major commitment to work with master gardeners to get this information out. So we've been working to get materials that the master gardeners can use, that they want to use, that are fun to use. They love bringing this out in the field because it's a good way for them to connect with their people that they want to work with. So it's essential that the master gardeners get it right because they are only volunteers. And, you know, if they're not trained right, if the materials aren't easy for them to use, they might get it wrong. And we don't want them suggesting pesticides that are illegal or inappropriate, for instance, or hardly all. So we've developed these, the pest notes that you saw on the web. We also have these quick tips, and the master gardeners can, we give them, they can give them away for free to consumers. These are just a few of them. We have, I think, about 45 or something like that. And so they're quick information for people on how to manage their scales or whatever. So those have been very successful. We distribute about 200,000 a year. We have in Spanish as well as English. So the master gardeners are using all these, and it's enhancing their programs a lot. And we do training of master gardeners. We've been doing every other year. We're trying to do a training or maybe every 3 years, training of master gardeners regional and get them some in-depth, hands-on training on new issues or new problems or new products. And in 2009, we did this, so we got people from all the, in the regional areas, from every master gardener county, and then those people would go back and train the people in their programs in their county. And we provide them with the online sources so they can use the training materials. And we had lots of fun where they had to look at pesticide products and for ants, for instance, and other alternatives, and give little presentations and identify pests. So, and they did. We surveyed them afterwards, and all these counties had used these materials within 6 months of the training. This is just an idea, to give you an idea. Master gardeners in 1 year answered more than 28,000 questions related to pest problems. That's a lot. And we have them now trained to consult the UCIPM materials, the pest notes, the quick tips, the books. And so they're giving out good answers. And they really are very important to link to consumers. Now, retail stores, as I said, are also important, but unfortunately many store employees have limited knowledge of pesticides and pest problems. But the thing is that stores do sell safer alternatives. And so you can't say, well, you can't sell anything. You have to say, well, try to move them toward these products. They're safer for the environment. And so we did a survey. This is Carrie, who's sitting over there. Carrie Windbeal Rojas is real key to the urban program and the master gardener program and this retail program. So we surveyed the stores to find out what they needed. I'm going to go through this fast. So we did a substantial survey of stores. We found out that, well, they did do training, but half of it was pretty informal, and the other half was the pesticide distributors mostly doing the training. We found that they were very interested in having training from the University of California. We got some ideas. They liked the idea of the kiosk and having a newsletter and online training. So we've moved in these directions. We found out that they're interested in pest ID and organic, less toxic products. So we've started a series of hands-on training for the retail staff, and we've trained 100 trainees from about 50 stores in the Bay Area and the Sacramento area over the last 6 months. So this is our new push forward, so that's a really good program. How do you evaluate your program? That's when the extension, when you do something, you're supposed to, when you do a program, you want to find out whether it's working. Are you getting your consumers? Are you getting behavioral change? I mean, you can't just keep doing this for years and years, the same thing, although sometimes we do, and then, you know, but the fact is it's not working, nobody's listening. So we want to go back and evaluate the programs to see whether, well, you know, are they learning anything? We've got this really neat tool, we call it the clickers, and so we're doing pre and post tests in our training program. So for instance, in that that retail program, we had a whole hands-on session on identifying pest problems. We had these neat little things where we've got the problem here without the name on it. They have to look at it, and then the name is, they can find out information on the back, and it's a good way for them to self-pace learning on how to identify problems. So for instance, we did the before and after there, and this was one of the questions we asked at the beginning of the program. On roads, what causes individual shoots to wilt, curl downwards, and then die when the rest of the plant remains healthy? Looking something like this. You guys know what that is? Well, at the beginning of the program, 13 or 14% thought it was the horntail, 3% the rose slug, 22% powdery mildew, and 61% thought it was verticillium. Well, by the end, we had 81% who realized it was the raspberry horntail, and we managed to squeeze down the verticillium. So we didn't teach everybody, but it's a way of showing, and they really like doing the clickers too. It's really great. So we also have a web page for the retail people, because we're expecting them to take this information and train other employees in their stores. Also for the retail people, as part of our outreach program, we have a new web portal for them. This is especially for the retail stores, so we focus information that they will be able to use. We've developed a newsletter, so we have a quarterly newsletter. It's an e-newsletter for retail store employees, but you too, if you're interested, you can get on our website and get a free subscription too. So we try to deal with issues that they're questions that they're likely getting to their stores in the next few weeks or months. We have online training courses for retail store employees, and Cheryl Reynolds is sitting in here. Cheryl's really the brains behind these, or one of the brains behind this. She really did a great job of putting these courses together, and they're 55-minute courses for people who can't get out of the store to our training. They go through their videos. It's fun. Many IP employees are featured there, doing things and talking. We have our own actors, and you can get a little certificate at the end. And the final thing, that picture didn't show up. We've got an IPM advocate program that I don't have time to talk about, but we're training some professional consultants, which we call IPM advocates, to work with stores and be a source of information for stores on pest management, and we're trying to link them with us. And so that's the extension program for our retail stores. I'm not going to go through all this, but there's a lot of components to it. And we need to constantly evaluate the programs to make sure that we're doing things effectively. We've got a lot of other outreach on urban things. We've got for landscape professionals, we've got a quarterly newsletter, the Green Bulletin. We've got some online training with a DPR continuing education credits related to water quality and pesticide use for landscape professionals and structural professionals. We're working on the IPM for Schools program and with child care centers required by law to focus on IPM. And so there's lots of people involved in these programs, as I said. Carrie Winbeal Rojas, who is a graduate from the IPM program here, master's program. It has been really key in a lot of these programs. Here she is at Picnic Day. You'll see her probably in Picnic Day this year, I hope. And Cheryl Reynolds, Jody's there too, but lots of people at the IPM program, and then also people in the counties, cooperative extension, master gardeners, retail. You can't do a cooperative extension program without a whole team. And I've been very lucky to have a great team. Eric?
Mary, how do you keep the horntails out of your roses?
Oh, you clip them off. Yeah?
Do you get a lot of feedback from master gardeners, like what questions they're getting from the public? Is there sort of a flow of information backwards in some ways?
Well, we do sort of informal. Sometimes they, you know, are asking us for information so they can answer a question. And some of the counties do keep lists of, you know, the questions that they've gotten at the help desk. And sometimes we look at those to see whether we need to do materials. But so it's possible. We maybe don't do it as much as you might think. But we have an informal.
Do the master gardeners work right out of the cooperative extension offices in the counties? They're answering phones and all that?
Yeah, there's usually a little office for the master gardeners. That's where they do their phone answering. But of course, they're out in the community a lot at landscape shows or garden clubs. But they connect with the office. So I know lots of you have to go to class and stuff, so you can come up and you can play with the kiosk or take some of these handouts if you like or look at stuff.
For the students, there's a sign-in form in the corner here for